Oh, boy. Big group. Well, I'm the cable guy. And John warned me there'll be a lot of questions. But when I registered, they also gave me this red speaker badge. I understand this is a newbie badge. So this is my first time at a PBS conference, so treat me nicely. the title that was given was quite a handful, so I thought I would spend some time and go over, here's my agenda slide, what we are doing so far with regards to digital video deployment. And as an introduction to how our upgrades have been going on, I thought I'll review, based upon who is all here. I think many of you already are familiar with the cable system, typical cable system, but I think it'll be interesting to see how our spectrums going forward will be managed, or we plan to manage. And also cover some of the applications and services that we're launching this year and for the next couple of years. And lastly, I cut the session regarding PSIPs and heard something about cable messing up with PSIPs and so forth. So perhaps we could have a discussion about that vis-a-vis open cable standards effort. All right. It's warm here. Okay. Just quickly about Time Warner Cable. We pass approximately 20 million homes. We're structured into separate operating divisions. 40 operating divisions. Typically, a division would have multiple head ends or multiple systems. But it's structured into divisions so that we have an aggregate of metropolitan systems. We started our upgrade process, and we'll talk about what upgrade is all about, but approximately 5 years ago. And this is pretty much our very last year. We are over 90% complete. The remaining areas that haven't been upgraded yet are areas that we acquired in the last couple of years, which we're working night and day to get those done. The upgrade ratio, as far as the cable industry is concerned, we are probably significantly ahead. The industry average is hovering around 50%. We are hopeful that the rest of our cable MSOs would finish the upgrade in the next 2 or 3 years as well. We started our digital deployment 3 years ago, and today we have basically two types of system. One is called Pegasus Digital Systems, and I'll cover that a little bit more in detail later, which is our primary digital system in most of our divisions, covering about 90%. We also use Motorola technology. Many of you are familiar with HITS-based systems. Are primarily supplied by Motorola, and that's in about 10% of our systems. This year last year was our first full year in our digital deployment. For this year, we're deploying at a clip of about close to 3 million set-tops per year. But our internal goal, or published goal, is to hit 50% digital penetration by the end of 2003. It's historically speaking, as a company, we have deployed about 1.5 million digital boxes, boxes in the past. So this represents a substantial increase in the deployment ratio of digital technology into the homes. DOCSIS, I was thinking really hard what the acronym stood for. I think it's data over cable systems or something or other. But what it really means is a high-speed cable modem system. And a few years ago, we started an effort called high-speed modem service using proprietary modems. And a year and a half ago, this DOCSIS standard was adopted across our industry. And currently, our systems are about 90% DOCSIS ready, so to speak. Our goal there is to hit over 20% penetration of cable modem by the end of 2003 as well. Here's a quick map. I had a whole listing of what every system's carriage with regards to digital was, but it became too complex, so I worked on this. Basically, you see where we are. We have any presence is the colored states. and it's pretty straightforward. Every single system today is digital for Time Warner Cable. The area where you see the, for those of you in the back who may not be able to see, the starred area, I'll zap my eyes here, these stars and the triangle, purple triangle, that's where we have HDTV carriage technology. What that means is basically if it's an off-air carriage, we would convert VSB to QAM. Everyone's familiar with VSB here, right? Just checking. I heard a lot of IT people in here too, so. But QAM is a quadrature amplitude modulation, which is the preferred method of digital modulation on our cable systems. For in the purple area, the highlighted star, the yellow stars, that's where we're carrying HD pay channels. Currently, we carry HBO HD, Stars HD, and Showtime HD. They provide both East Coast and West Coast feed, so giving us approximately, six channels of HDTV content, pay content. The areas with the purple triangle are areas where we have already off-air HD carriage, and I personally don't know which cable systems are carrying what affiliates, but today we have carriage agreement with all the networks, and we're really happy to have signed an agreement with PBS as well. Oops. Just wanted to point out, I did install Honolulu myself. Okay. All right. So let me quickly talk about what a cable system is like these days. Many of you are probably cable customers today, I hope. Excuse me. A few years ago, or before we started our upgrade, a typical cable system is what we would call a tree and branch architecture. You would originate all your signals here, and we would use trunks or whatever they may be called, but basically analog amplifying technology and stretch it out all the way out to our customer's home. In a large-scale system, we've had systems as much as 45 amplifier cascade. So many of you are very familiar with the problems with that. You have aggregate distortion, etc. I probably don't have to go through that. And subsequently, you end up with pretty lousy pictures. Also, it's much more prone to a single point of failure. If a truck hits the pole that's carrying this amp, we lose the whole system. And lastly, with regards to interactive service, the upstream path is essentially, I would say, it's arguable, but it was essentially unusable. I started my career on a product called Cube in Columbus, Ohio. What we ended up doing was we ended up switching each amp one at a time on the reverse path to accommodate or deal with the noise issues. But it was a very difficult system to manage. So, several issues, as noted on the slide there. When we go through what we call the hybrid fiber coax, or HFC upgrade, basically we take advantage of both fiber technology and the last mile of coax. And for coaxial cable, the last mile, if you only use maybe two or three amplifiers, it's a very good high bandwidth technology. The only problem is, as I mentioned earlier, you cannot cascade a lot of amps. With AM fiber, which it's represented by these dark green lines, you have quite a bit of distance characteristics. So what we have done was taken out these trunk lines, so to speak, and replaced all of them into fiber into separate serving areas. Typically when we go through our upgrade, our system has been designed to pass 500 homes per node of fiber. And what that represents is a direct connectivity from the head end all the way to that 500 home pocket. Okay. Just to put this in perspective in terms of capital investment, we have spent approximately $2 billion per year over the last 5 years to to complete our upgrade. There's a lot of advantage to this, not to mention reliability. This diagram here is not exactly correct in that actually these 500 home nodes itself are aggregated into what we call hubs of 20,000 homes passed hubs. And the signals are then all the hubs within a system are interconnected using various distribution technologies appropriate for the application. The picture quality improvement is very significant, and also the reliability numbers. I don't have the stats with me right now, but we found it to be a very reliable distribution system. I think all of you, this is a spectrum allocation. Many of you are very familiar with this or live with this every day. So when you take a look at a coax, when you look into that little coax cable, basically we are reusing the exact same spectrum, which the off-air spectrums are represented as an equivalence there. If you were a timer on our cable subscriber today, this is what you have. We have a quite a robust 80-channel or so analog service. In many systems, those channels are not scrambled, allowing our customers to connect as many TV sets as possible. It is important, while we are all migrating towards digital, we serve typically 3 TV sets in the home, and not all of them have digital services on them. But at least we will be able to offer a whole house service with this robust tier. The upper spectrum, again, these are just examples, but from 550 megahertz and beyond, are reserved for digital services. Currently, our typical upgrades go up to 750 megahertz, but in some systems, we've extended it to 860 megahertz. If we break this down a little further to see what's in this digital spectrum itself, we anticipate various services. Today, I have another slide here because I can't do the math live. The digital broadcast here is any place from 100 to 140 streams. It depends on how you count streams, obviously. Our satellite folks count audio streams as one, so therefore we have to have this big number. But in terms of spectrum, it's about 60 megahertz worth of spectrum. We have reserved, in this slide it says 6 HD streams, but we actually have a thing called a digital bank for systems that's carrying all the pay channels as well as the network affiliates. This we would need about 12 HD streams. We could certainly accommodate that today. We also have a spectrum reserved for what we typically call the switched services. They're not necessarily switched in the sense of telephony, but they are switched in the sense of providing on-demand streams. And when we take a look at that further, our cable modem service, again, this DOCSIS cable modem service, it occupies 6 megahertz. It's basically the same MPEG-2 transport readapted to provide data service. It offers 38 megabits per second of throughput within that particular coax. Now, if you remember, each serving area is 500 homes. That means that particular 6 megahertz is unique to those 500 homes. We also have some legacy systems, which is slowly being phased out for modem service. Voice or IP telephony or voice services, this is basically just a reservation. We have not deployed any telephony service. We have been testing them in a couple of our divisions, namely Rochester and Portland. We plan to use, actually, DOCSIS technology for voice in the very distant future. Not distant. Did I say distant? Very near future. Ooh, not my area. but I do work on this part. This is what we call the video on demand spectrum. The number of, the amount of frequency occupied here is somewhat arbitrary. It really depends on the usage behavior for our customers. But when we look at the ability to provide 60, let's say 3 megabit per second streams, that represents approximately 1,200 video on demand users. That that is more than enough for the next 2 or 3 years for an area covering more than 4,000 homes. So we, again, considering that our pocket size or the node size is 500 homes, we have quite a room to grow yet. That's just today. there are several methods that we always have our own internal debate as to how we would change or migrate our spectrum usage. One scenario is to collapse our analog tier somewhat. We do that by eliminating some of the analog pay-per-view channels, etc. Today, in the digital spectrum, we offer 40 to 50 channels worth of pay-per-view, as opposed to 3 channels on analog. And I think you can understand the efficiencies associated to that, which translates to a much wider upper spectrum reserve that could be reserved for digital, which basically means more channels, more digital channels, more HD channels, and more modem service. So I'm not going to go into the detail, but we anticipate similar usage, just higher penetration of these various services in the future. Well, here's the math. So again, I think what should be noted is we could accommodate easily 20 HDTV signals and still have a significant amount of extra space for future usage or other expansion requirements here. Now, so what happens if we run out of spectrum? Well, during our upgrade, what we have done for every node, we've added a fiber that is currently in use. We have added an extra 5 dark fiber to it. So what you could think about is we could activate that from our hubs or from our head ends with optoelectronics on the other end, which is not cheap. It's still quite expensive, but the fiber plumbing is already there. It's quite possible in some future point in time to anticipate being able to reduce the node size further down to about 100 homes. I want to talk a little bit about the digital set-top program. Within our company, we call it the Pegasus program. I worked on this experiment called the Full Service Network in Orlando. And many of you may have read about it. Many of you think it was probably a total failure, right? Oh, it's okay, you could say it. All right. So they kicked me out of there very quickly. They told me that this stuff doesn't work, it's too expensive, etc. It actually worked. I'm quite proud of it. A lot came out of that full service network effort. Paul was talking about MPEG 2. When we did FSN, we only had MPEG 1. We had to create a transport. We used ATM. There were no audio standards. There were no asset distribution standards. Basically, we didn't have QAM. We needed a new ASIC. We enabled a company called Broadcom, which later became a $20 billion company, but I didn't buy any stock, so it didn't much matter. But Pegasus had a different name. Pegasus was called the deployable full service network program as opposed to the undeployable one. And so the strategy was to have a Trojan horse approach. Cable companies typically would deploy technology on an incremental basis. To start off and say, we'll just put a real-time two-way server-based system, etc., was a pretty big chunk to bite off. So the services we started off with was broadcast, and we convinced our management to allow us to put in a few dollars in there to allow two-way, real-time two-way services in the future. And they did not like Trojan Horse, so we just picked another name, and hence Pegasus. Now you know the real story. But the system is based upon MPEG 2, not just MPEG 2 video, but the full as you some of you heard Paul, Dr. Moroni discussed this, but MPEG-2 transport, that is the base technology. We use a lot from the current DVS spec, as well as DAVIC and DVB standards. The two-way system uses DAVIC real-time two-way. Unfortunately, it's not widely used anywhere these days except for ourselves. So if we had to do it again, we probably will have picked DOCSIS. This is deployed in 38 out of 40 divisions, again, we're very satisfied with the acceptance from our consumer base. The current services is pretty simple. It's more channels, more channels, more channels. If on a digital service, you could have the horse channel 6. So it's got a lot of good stuff. But there are the other service, which is relatively new to our customers, is the on-screen digital navigator, which has a lot of implications when we think about PSIPs and so forth in the future. The important part for us is a deployment of what we call video on demand as a platform. Video on demand is basically a server with video pumps. I think you actually have a lot of, quote, VOD systems in your networks as well. The deployment is starting currently over 3 divisions, and the first application to use the video on demand technology is to provide movies on demand. We currently have this launch in Tampa, Honolulu, and Austin. And clearly in these divisions, our customers, the preferred means of buying a movie is through movie on demand. It gives them the complete flexibility of pause, rewind, fast forward, just as you have a VCR, but you don't have to take it back to the rental store. We are somewhat disappointed that we have not had a wider deployment. It's primarily due to the title negotiations with the studios, of which one of them was our sister company, and they're the toughest to deal with. In any event, we would like to have a company-wide deployment by the end of 2002. The other new service that we are currently under, which is currently under development, is a product called Subscription Video on Demand. It's a very simple concept. An example is HBO on demand, or for that matter, any pay channel on demand. But for the month that you have subscribed to that particular subscription, all the titles are available on demand. So if you are a big Sopranos fan and you're never home on Wednesdays, Sopranos will be available for that month on demand, just like movies on demand for one fixed fee. We think it's quite an interesting and attractive offering. The other project that we are working on to deploy onto the same Pegasus platform is Enhanced TV. Since it's a top secret program, I can't tell you too much about it, but you could guess who our parent company is these days. So it's most likely we'll do something email and so forth. But one of the key things, which I think many of you could understand, is television and PCs are just fundamentally different. We are very concerned about applications that would just take a PC-based application and throw it on television. Television is a much more rich viewing environment. We do not want to clutter our screens. However, we do want to offer more informational content to which our customers would consider to enhance their viewing as opposed to interfere with their viewing. I put down this AdFlip trigger thing, but one of the things we are hopeful is that more content or more programming will have AdFlip information to which our set-tops will be able to react and take advantage of some of the pointers that come down. Coming soon again, but this is a little further out and somewhat controversial. Probably many of you have TiVo and Replay and so forth. We are currently working on a set-top box, which will have 2 tuners and at least 40 gigabytes worth of storage space to offer personal video recording service to our consumers. We're finding this to be a very attractive service, however, very expensive. And the preferred solution for us is to offer this type of service through the network. Well, many of you could understand, it's a very difficult task. It's very different from movies on demand. But basically, if you ask any engineer, they'll say, well, yeah, it's technically possible. And then it's done. But many issues associated to copyright, and we're still trying to sort those out first before we do anything. I didn't talk too much about the data services and voice services, but we do anticipate future generation boxes or devices, either set-top box or cable modems, to have a higher level of integration. We see primarily in the area of home networking to be something that we will be able to take advantage of. Again, a lot of the cable modem boxes today have HPNA. Some of them do have home options for 802.11. I know many of you have wireless connectivity already in this room. We would like to offer that within the home. And this is the one that I'm a little weak on. Open Cable. I chair the Open Cable Certification Board. So this is my area that I work on with other cable operators. But Open Cable is our retail initiative. Basically, it is to enable consumer electronic companies to provide devices for our consumers without having to lease a box from the cable company. It started off by the Cable Act of 1996, I believe, where the FCC required us to separate conditional access, that is security, from navigation itself. So for that, we invented a product called POD. I should say a product, a spec called POD. POD stands for Point of Deployment Module. It's basically a PCMCIA type of card to which you could plug it into a TV set or a set top or whatever, and it separates out security. And that particular spec is complete. We are currently on our seventh wave of certifying different hosts to which that would be able to use this POD module. One of the big issues we have, however, is the software environment. As you could see, when our services range from 150 channels worth of digital broadcast service to movie on demand, impulse pay-per-view, etc. Our service is very tightly coupled to the user interface. And from that standpoint, we found it to be very important that we create a software application environment to which we will be able to download a particular type of app to enable new services. And it has turned out to be a very difficult task. It primarily involves many, many, many companies. But we have just published the first spec in January, and we're hopeful that we will have a spec to which people could build products to by the end of this year. When I was asked to give this presentation, I was asked to bring all the list of standards, but there's no way I could remember all those, so I cheated and stole this diagram. POD spec, excuse me, the security module has been submitted to various DVS, digital video systems standards body. The head-end environment, this is the one that I think that's very important for making sure the host is working. OCAP is the middleware where we will download the application into the hardware itself. And what I failed to bring today was the interface associated to here. And I guess we could take that as a Q&A later. Well, just to close really briefly, cable, as you know, is a very much a local infrastructure. Local services are very important for us, especially to differentiate from our competitor. To that end, we have also spent a lot of development effort to create enhanced television for our local customers. And the biggest application for now is not necessarily interactive, it's creating local news channels, etc. So there may be an opportunity for us to work together there. But most critical for us is delivery of high-definition content. As you could tell from my spectrum discussion, we have a lot of spectrum. And we believe we're the best medium to offer a lot of HD content. Today, unfortunately, there's not a lot of HD content. We are looking forward to working with you in the future. Thank you. I guess we could take questions.
Great presentation. Two things that have been a bit of a surprise to many of us. I'm sorry, right down here. as we look forward, and I'm from St. Paul, and we're thrilled to be carried on the Minneapolis system of Time Warner. But there are two things that were surprised to many people. One, that the standard issue cable box cannot decode any high-definition broadcasts that we send out. And the other, that the PSIP information we send really isn't used at all by those boxes, and we have to trust a separate set of equivalent PSIP type instructions to be set up by the cable system and the EPG to convey that same kind of information. So comment on any prospect of those things changing.
Okay. First on the digital set-top issue, Today, all of our most of our digital set-top boxes are standard definition only boxes. We have to deploy a separate digital box, HD box, to enable our HD customers. And one of the things I failed to mention is last year we installed about 2,000 HD customers, and this year we are hopeful to install about 10,000 HD customers, and next year perhaps about tenfold that, maybe 100,000 or so. The issue we have had, and we still do have, is has to do with the core component available for us to use in our boxes. Many of the HD chips that were available to us a year and a half ago did not provide any graphics, for example. They lacked integration with regards to security systems. So as a result, if you get a hold of one of our HD boxes from the front, it looks exactly the same as a regular box. But if you open it up, it's got a lot of stuff in it. that adds substantially to cost and reliability issues. By the end of this year, we're hopeful that the semiconductor or the ASICs that were introduced last year would actually show up into our product line. So that would solve the HD issues. The question on PSIP, well, that's a very, very tricky question for us. most of the management information associated to channels today is a derivative from the conditional access systems that we're using. And as a result, we have to basically translate that particular information so that it matches our electronic program guide. There's a couple other issues there, too. When we carry a HD signal, let's say we take a VSB feed and demodulate it and remodulate on QAM, naturally, the spectrum location is different. The enumeration of that channel has to be adjusted properly for the guide. So as a result, there are issues there that we have to resolve. But that's one of the areas I'm very hopeful that Open Cable will eventually address. Once addressed, I believe the system suppliers such as Motorola and Scientific Atlanta will probably be able to help us upgrade, not so much in the set-top box, but it'll most likely be a code download to our products. That's particularly for a digital set-top box. Now, we also, in most cases, our agreement requires us to pass through the PSIP. And to that end, I'm pretty sure that we are passing through PSIP. If not, I better go check. And that is very important for us because we anticipate a lot of customers that may not require a digital box that would rather prefer to get off-air signals in the clear. We do not plan to encrypt any off-air signals, and for that regard, you don't really need a box. So I will have to follow up with you on that one.
Mike, just a follow-up on the HD boxes. Gary Shapiro from the CEA was here this morning and said that the CEA and the NCTA still haven't agreed on how to plug digital sets into cable systems and vice versa. What's the interface between the HD boxes that you deploy and the HD sets that your subscribers have? How do they plug into each other?
Oh, that's a very tricky question. Well, today, when I go out to my HD customer and install a box, the only interface I'm sure to have is YPRPB, basically component video. That's it. Now, the problem is it is an uncopy protected output. So for contents that are not required to be copy protected, it's not an issue. However, going forward, we would prefer a digital interface, obviously. And currently, there's quite a bit of debate whether it should be 1394 or a DVI-CP. Just briefly, they both are copy-protected digital interfaces, which is fine going forward if our customers buy a TV set with these digital interfaces. We will be able to provide the appropriate boxes at that point in time, should a box be needed. I guess the problem is between now and the time we finalize what this digital interface is going to be, there will be many, many HD monitors with uncopy-protected component input. And the big problems that we are still trying, we're still under negotiation. It's not particularly the cable industry that's under negotiation, but there's a lot of negotiation with the CEA and the MPAA aspects of this as to what do we do with legacy HD units. I can't believe HD units are legacies already. But a lot of the discussion stems around providing, we would like to keep it. I mean, if you think about it, we cannot go back to those same customers and say, sorry, no HD for you because somebody else told us we can't give you HD. That would be a very bad outcome. So the point of negotiation so far has been to allow us to down-res on copy-protected material, and should there be a digital interface, we would use the copy protection scheme as associated to there. I'm not sure if I answered your question or that was too much information, but...
No, that was good. And an unrelated follow-up, if I may. Since the analog channels consume a disproportionate amount of your bandwidth on the cable systems, what are the obstacles to moving those channels to digital, and what's the time frame for doing that?
Well, I'm not sure we want to remove our analog channels. Maybe that's a controversial thing to say. Well, I'm sure you have also contemplated this issue. If you look at the statistics of analog devices out there, there are approximately 250 million analog devices, of which many of them are cable-ready devices. So while long-term, in one of my slides, we show the gradual migration of taking analog signals out, I think we have to do that with care so that we do not have our customer base be upset with the fact that all of a sudden their TV sets don't work. The flip side is if we also did that, we now have to bring digital set-top boxes to every single device in the home. That is a lot of devices. And most of you probably don't even like digital boxes, period. So we would like to continue to be able to offer those choices to our customers.
Thank you. I'd like a little clarification. When Bruce was asking you about PSIP and passing things through, and you had mentioned that you do pass through the data, and in fact, people could pick up the HD without a set-top box. But well, earlier you said you were switching to QAM. You know, you're taking
that's
DSP to
good
QAM.
Point. Thank you. You caught me. I forget the particular DVS agreement we struck with the CEA, but there's a set of spec that clarifies both non-encrypted carriage using QAM standard, to which today many of the consumer electronics company can build a device, whether it's a VCR or TV set or whatever the case may be, to allow QAM tuning directly. So I missed that little piece of information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.